This is CliffCentral.com.
It's The Weeknd with Call Out My Name. Ben has a theory that The Weeknd has run out of material. It all starts to sound like 50 Shades of Grey for him.
Yeah, well, look, maybe that's their vibe, you know, like everyone's got a vibe.
Yeah.
But it just becomes tedious to listen to. As a critical music listener, I'm going to say that.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, you know what? Maybe you've got a point.
You know, life is like an onion, Gareth. You got to have the layers.
How so? Is that what it is?
You got to have the layers.
Okay, thanks, Ben.
Makes you cry.
Okay.
That too, good. that too.
All right. We've got some interesting things to get into this morning. But first and foremost, I thought it would be a really good idea, since we've spoken about this so much over the last couple of months, years. Tammy Peterson is with News 24. She's a journalist there. And Tammy, it's a pleasure to have you on CliffCentral.com this morning. I hope you're well.
I am. Thank you. Good morning.
Good. Listen, Tammy, this case feels like it's been going on forever, and it did feel like it was much more protracted and extended than the case of, let's say, Sandile Mantswe here in Joburg with the murder of Karabo. So I was just curious, does it feel like, as a journalist who covers these kinds of things, does it feel like you get some catharsis, you get some relief from this when it finally comes to a close?
I don't think. I think there was a reason, firstly, why this case was so protracted. Remember the amount of samples, number one, that were taken from that scene. According to Lieutenant Colonel Otto, that testified, the DNA expert, she said they had never ever analyzed this much samples from one singular scene. Obviously, we know the extent of these attacks, and they had to cover all their bases. But
sure. In
the end, 151 samples had to be tested. And obviously, there would be the system that's in place to make sure that things aren't contaminated and that they actually get the purest result that they possibly can. So there were many technicalities. We had a witness that had no, that couldn't recall what had happened. We had the other witness who was the accused. So I think this was a case where it was inevitable that it was going to take this long. I don't think it was unnecessarily long, because in the end, we heard that India actually couldn't afford it.
Mm.
So the longer it took, the more it cost him. And eventually, when we came to the end, there were witnesses that hadn't been called, defense witnesses like Dr. Sedamore, that is now testifying in the Rhoda case. He had been one of the experts that had been in court and sort of working with the defense team. Eventually wasn't called. We don't know exactly why that was. But at the end of the day, there was a point where the defense advocacy supporters said, my client doesn't have any more money. So I don't think it was a case of where we could have speeded things up simply because it was just a technical case.
Mm. Well, I suppose it was very complicated, and there are a lot of people who you know, he killed a lot of people, this guy. I mean, there's his brother, his mother, his father, and he tried to kill his sister as well. And then there are the other lesser charges. What was the atmosphere like in the court yesterday?
I think the only completely calm, stone-faced person in that courtroom was Andy. It was, obviously, when it was the judgment on the 21st of May, when the verdict was handed down, we had the same sort of expression. So it's just stone-faced, looking forward, absolutely no eye contact with anybody else. Yesterday, obviously, he was looking over his shoulder at Danielle, his girlfriend, that had also been attending their proceedings. But it was somewhat, I don't know if I can say, it was somber, it was. But it was, there's also, I think, a sense of relief that this was supposed to be over yesterday. And of course, we know that it's not anymore, because there's going to be a plea in the judgment, so that will be heard, the application to appeal.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't just appeal a judgment, we have to apply and give reasons why we feel that the judgment should, that the verdict and the conviction needs to be relooked. But Judge Desai can still say, nope, I don't want to do that. This is my final decision, and we don't know further correspondence will be entered into. But I think there was sort of a, Hendy knew he was going to appeal, obviously. So there was always question in words, little nods. Every time Judge Desai gave him a sentence, all he did was nod. So there was, for us, obviously I've been following this for the past year, we become DNA experts somehow.
Yeah.
And so this was, it was, interesting, and it was, but it's also really, I don't know, it catches you sort of off guard to see somebody just being so supposedly accepting of what was happening, because at that point we didn't know that.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost like with every nod he was kind of acknowledging, yes, yeah, all right, it was me, you know, it's a strange way to behave.
That was kind of, for somebody like me, that you see nerd like that, I obviously know, and I kind of had a picture that he was going to be on his judgment, but yeah, there was something kind of disconcerting of seeing somebody do that. Yeah. But also don't think this is an out of character for him. He's not somebody that showed emotion during the trial, when he was found guilty, or obviously as I said during sentencing. The only time I've seen him cry, I think there was three occasions. One of it was when Dr. Anthony was doing his the autopsy report of obviously the injuries that had caused his family's death. And then the other time was when they played the emergency call. He cried then. Remember, that was the long, 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 long emergency call that was played. So he's not somebody that shows emotion. He just says then. Also, obviously, we know he is on chronic medication. He has decision anxiety and microchronic epilepsy. So we don't know what it is that makes him so seemingly cold. But that is also something that the judge mentioned. You show no remorse. He didn't say, you show no remorse. He said, you have no remorse. There's a difference.
Yeah, it's incredible because, you know, normally if you're sentenced, if you show a little bit of remorse, they consider that a mitigating factor. Exactly. They couldn't exactly enter that as a mitigating factor here because he's shown none.
Exactly. And also, it's very important that if you take the court into your confidence, if you tell them, this is why I did it, this is what happened, that is something that the court would consider. You took that into your confidence, you told us why it happened, this is something for us to consider. Even the judge during sentencing proceedings asked in his defense, give me something. You aren't giving me anything. All you are saying is that you were 20 at the time, that the offense, that the murders took place, and that is the first time offender, which is standard. If that is the case, that is really the basic factors that could be presented by defense counsel. But judge asked him repeatedly, give me something. I will even take a break. I'll take an adjournment. You can consult with your client. And all advocate would have to say was that his client maintains his innocence, that there's nothing more that he can do.
So wouldn't his legal team then have been the ones to remind him that, listen, if you just explain to yourself why you committed this crime, it would work in your favor? Ultimately, he as a client could still say no, but wouldn't that have been the advice given to him?
I think that probably would have been the advice. There was sort of a advocate group that just looked like he was so over this, like I've been there, I've done that, I've tried.
Now tell me about this girl, this girlfriend of his who was there for the whole trial, and she seems to, I mean, they were traveling together during the course of the trial, and between sentencing and conviction and all kinds of other things, or just before conviction rather. So what's the story there? Does she want to talk to anyone, or is she kind of just gets in and gets out?
No, she just comes to, couldn't think of it. We've only actually physically seen her outside chambers twice. That was on the day of the verdict and the day of sentencing. We've known that she was in the building. That's the building. It's right across the High Court. It's where the defense advocate's offices are. So we knew she was there. I've seen her smoking before, but she hasn't been in court actually attending proceedings. And so when she was there on verdict day, and then she was there on sentencing, but that was that she was there. She ran out on sentence on verdict day. Obviously, she was very emotional. I think she expected. She walked in with him that morning. She expected to walk out with him that afternoon, but that was not the case. But yesterday, obviously, she's been kept in court with hospital fiction. She's seeing him only when she goes to visit him at prison. But it was such a sad thing. She was sitting where the photographers, where all of us take our photos, obviously, waiting for him to come in. And she had been calling him and trying to get his attention. And I don't think he heard her because there was obviously all this clicking and all this noise and all these people standing up and staring at him. It was really sad. I think at the end of the day, this is this is not, she didn't do anything.
Yeah.
Too. She obviously met him afterward. And it's a sad situation, but unfortunately, it is what it is.
So Tammy, what about the situation with Marley? I mean, do we know anything more about how she's doing, whether she's safe? She's obviously removed herself from this whole situation as much as possible. She's being protected. What else do we know?
We unfortunately don't know anything else. We are, the court has ordered that, number one, we don't report on Marley. We don't take photos of Marley. We don't, sort of get into a space without permission from a curator. So in terms of her health, in terms of anything related to it, even if she had been attending court proceedings, we were actually barred from taking photos of her. So as far as I understand, she is doing well. That's really all I can say. We don't know anything about Natalie.
What a very bizarre story this whole thing has been. I mean, it's probably one of the most brutal kind of mass slaughters within a family that I think we've ever had in South African history, and maybe even in the world. Is there big international interest in this, like there was for Oscar Pistorius, or is it not nearly as big because Henry's not a celebrity?
There was actually, I know in the beginning, before we had the streaming for the application by Media24, which is obviously the owner of Media24, to stream the court proceedings, there were international media within the first few days. But I think they got clever, and that's probably the story from the team. But in the beginning, we had Australian media here. I think I recall there was UK media had also been attending. So there has been great international interest, and there have been writing stories of their own, as I've seen online. But especially, I think, the Australian media, simply because Sandra Dias had lived in Australia for a few years, and obviously they were a well-known, sort of respected family in Australia when they lived there. And also because he was a student there, and he was also doing his studying in Australia. So yeah, there was especially from us than anywhere else in the world, I think.
Sure. Well, I'm kind of relieved it's over, but I don't think we've heard the end of Henry van Breda, because I think that people are fascinated by how this whole thing unfolded. We still don't have any idea of whether or not he had a reason for this, whether he just had an episode. Psychologists will be called in. I'm sure many more stories will be told. Do you think there's any chance at all that we might get Henry's version of this at some point, that he might decide to write something down in prison, that he might decide to tell someone the story?
No.
No.
I don't think so.
He's like a closed book, this guy.
He is. I also think that because he has been maintaining his innocence throughout, I don't think he's going to turn it down now. Because he had this opportunity. He had the chance. To actually get a more lenient sentence if he just spoke. He didn't take that opportunity. I don't think that we are going to hear anything from Henry van Breda again. He's probably going to serve his sentence, come out quietly, and move somewhere where nobody knows him. I think that's the problem. Because he seems really private. Eh? He doesn't speak to journalists at all. All he said to us one day was, good morning. And that, even that was surprising. But mind you, Gareth, I can honestly tell you that there has never been any aggression showed towards anybody. Seems very mild-mannered. Comes into the dock when he was still obviously out in bail. Comes into the dock, sits down, quiet. Would greet at times and whatever. But I think, though, the fact that he had the chance to speak and he didn't says a lot.
Yeah.
It does say a lot. And also, he was willing to even sit for at least 25 years in Drakenstein prison. So, if obviously his appeal on the 27th of June is unsuccessful, but you had the chance and you just decided you're not going to take it.
We'll never know, huh? This is so frustrating.
It is. Because I really want to. I'm a person like everyone else. It would have been, I think, also for anybody, a member of the public, for some kind of closure, just so that you can sort of make sense of it in your own mind. Did something happen? Was there an argument? Was there underlying? Obviously, these things don't justify killing someone.
No.
But it does sort of give you a more complete picture. And I think that is what Judge Desai wanted. Give me a complete picture so that I can come to a fair conclusion. But unfortunately, if you don't give me anything, I can't give you anything else. Because he said on Tuesday, he said this is not going to be a difficult sort of judgment for him to make because he has only so much that he can work with. So that is why I think yesterday we didn't look surprised at all. He knew it was coming.
Well, Tammy, thank you very much for speaking to us this morning and for covering this story. Tammy Peterson from News 24 and lots of other news that we got to get to. So, God, I mean, it's so frustrating that this guy didn't tell us what the hell happened.
Yeah, I think that's something that will linger with the case is when you know you're kind of screwed, let's be honest, that was always going to be the verdict. How do you clam up?
Oh, well,
what is the benefit of this?
I don't know. This guy must have like the most incredible emotional control ever, or he has none at all.
Yeah, do you remember there was a story in 2000, I think, and one where Kevin Pizarro shot both of his parents and the housekeeper and the family dog?
Oh yes, I do remember
his
that.
Sister was I'm hesitant to talk about it because I know her, but his sister was out of the house at the time, and yeah, he's still in Polsmoor. That's a kind of similar. He had managed to, like, as a 20-year-old suburban white South African kid with the whole, like, you know, private school kind of background, managed to acquire a bunch of handguns. You know, my point with that is he's not like a gang affiliated guy.
He
managed to get a hold of a bunch of guns, and yeah, that was also, it's very similar and equally horrific.
Jesus. Well, all right, we get to some news in a second. Here's Hi Rob from Amsterdam. Hey Rob, what's up, dude?
Yo, what's up?
You're right, man. What's happening, bro?
I just wanted to phone in and say what's up, because now that I phone in all the time now, because I'm like, gee. And I want to say what up to Gord.
Yeah.
It's crazy. Actually, the first time I called in when Gord's online, but I always listen to you, Gord. You're like funny as fuck, bro. I give it to you.
Thanks, Holmes. Appreciate
Gord,
that.
Dude, you're fucking wild, bro.
Hey, Rob, did you do anything last weekend, and what do you got planned for this one?
Oh, nothing. I'm this weekend I'm chilling, but just hold on, bro. Just wait. Ing, you have to say what's up. Say what up.
What's up?
It's my doll, Ing. She's just chilling out.
Ing.
Having a good time.
Nice.
Yeah, I'm about to head to work soon, bro, but Ing is going to chill the fuck out.
What are you doing at work today?
Hold on. Would you describe her to me just quickly? I just need to have a visual picture.
Is she on Instagram yet? On your profile?
Brunette. You know how me like it.
Let her describe herself.
Ing, I'm just describing you. Ing, it's brunette, like good body, like minxy face.
Yeah.
Lying on her phone in my bedroom, which I now have a red light in. I've installed a red light into my room.
What for?
You know. Ing, does it add to the ambience of my room? What are your thoughts?
I can't wait till Ing leaves work.
Okay, she says can't wait till I leave to work.
She sounds exotic. Where's Ing from?
Yeah, what?
Dutch, bro. You know how we do it up here.
Okay, so she's solid Dutch. Okay, very good.
Yeah.
You two obviously had a good night last night. Anything fun happen?
Yeah, dude, mad shit. But basically chilled on the canal, watched like the sunset.
Yeah, that's very romantic. That's very nice.
Yeah. You know how it is? Like, I even went swimming, bro, in that dirty water. I had to shower when I got home, but I was swimming.
Nice.
And then, you know, I just had to impress. And then, yeah, I was all chilled, bro. It's all good in the hood. That's how we do it.
Living
your
best life over there, bro. I'm feeling like
living.
I went
motherfucking La Vida Loca, bro.
I made the wrong life choices. I should be where you are.
No, you say that, bro, but you don't want to be here in winter, I'll tell you, bro.
Wow.
Let me tell you, dog. It's hectic.
I'm insulated. But, it'll be fine.
I just wanted to call and say, like, it's the weekend, baby.
Yes.
I hope you always get loose.
Very
and,
nice.
And have a good one, bro. I'm going to listen to this from the beginning. Well, from part one, because I have to go to work. But, yeah.
All right.
Sick as fuck.
And tell Ing we say hey.
Yeah. Just hold on. Ing. They say hey at the Cliff Central studio, yo.
Hi.
Cliff Central, don't worry. It's like hectic. It's freaking huge.
Okay, thanks, Rob. All right.
Okay.
Thank you, brother.
Okay, peace and love, dog.
Peace and love. Peace and love. Very good.
I love him. He's my spirit animal.
Hi, Rob.
He is amazing.
He's the best. Where did you find Hi, Rob?
He found us.
Yeah, he found us.
And he just phoned to say, like, what's up?
Yes, sis.
Mm-hmm.
Brilliant.
He's terrific. All right.
I love how he's about to go to work and he's already high as fuck.
He might be like Obelix. You know how Obelix fell into the vat of magic potion as a baby, yes, and he's always on the potion? Yeah. High Rob might just be like have saturated his cellular things with weed because he sounds high naturally. He's the best.
Well, I did spend a day or two in Amsterdam last year, and I did catch up with High Rob. He is as much fun as he sounds.
Peace and love. Peace and love.
All right, let's move on. We've got things to do and news stories to cover. Mubs, tell us what's happening in the universe.
So the question right now is whether or not the world is more or less peaceful than, say, a decade ago.
Of course it's more peaceful. It stands to reason that as we advance, we become less and less warlike. And if you think about how many people are dying every year in the world now, as opposed to 10, 20, 30 years ago, it would seem clear to me that it's better now. Am I right?
You are wrong.
Oh, Jesus.
Steve Killalea, who is the head of the Institute of Economics and Peace. They have their headquarters in Australia.
Peace and love, peace and love.
And they've basically released an international index which shows that the world is less peaceful than a decade ago. It's mostly due to conflict in the Middle East, Africa,
see,
as well as the spillover from that with every other nation trying to involve themselves.
I blame Syria.
In the Middle East and Africa. It's a collective effort.
Let me just think. 10 years ago, what was it? 2008.
2008.
So Afghanistan was still going strong. When was Obama voted in? 2008.
I would have said 6, but it would be such a guess.
He was voted, I don't know, 2008, somewhere around there. But there was still Afghanistan and Iraq. Syria hadn't boiled over into open warfare yet, but it was certainly like a civil war at that point. I don't know.
So Europe has faced a migrant crisis over the past decade following wars in Libya and Syria. More than 1 million people from Africa and the Middle East, as well as many from Afghanistan, have tried to reach the continent via Turkey or by sea. And by analyzing data from think tanks, research institutes, government and universities, the IEP estimated that violence has escalated and the cost of violence, because, you know, at the end of the day, everything is about money. Mm-hmm. The cost of violence to the economy has also escalated. As of 2017, it stood at $14.8 trillion. That is how much it costs when the humans are fighting each other.
Yeah, but can we stop this in the Middle East, please?
If the least peaceful countries, such as Syria, South Sudan, and Iraq, were as stable as the most peaceful, who are considered to be your Icelands and New Zealand, then that would bring the cost of war to the economy down, obviously. And Killalea also says that peace is integrally locked in with economic wealth.
Yeah.
Europe was ranked as the most peaceful region in the world, while the Middle East and North Africa are considered the least peaceful. But over the past decade, the global impact of those situations have resulted in the entire planet being less peaceful than just 10 years ago.
I hate that stat. I'm really upset about this. I thought we were better off now than we were 10 years ago.
Yeah, you got to look at like overall peace levels like you look at climate. Like it's the graph is going to have peaks and troughs, but it's going to go on a downward trend or an upward trend over a longer period of time. So like it is a bit of a bummer that we're not having a great decade so far. But if you still look like we are, as Gareth was basically implying just now, we are progressively more peaceful as we advance, over time and with technology. So
it depends on where you live. I mean, it's so geographical, this. So basically, if you're in North Africa or in the Middle East, you're in a steaming pile of crap. And that's why you just got to get out of those places. You know, I understand people wanting to migrate the hell out of there. What a nasty place. A nasty war and rubble and politics and bombs and overt like animosity and religious fanaticism. It's just an awful mix of ingredients that are bound to lead to people being unhappy.
And just killing people. Like, you know, no matter what, no matter how strongly you believe in your religion and someone else wants to do a different religion and do it in
Sometimes it's the same religion, it's just different sects within the religion.
But I mean like you say, okay.
Like the biggest problem in Iraq is Sunni and Shia Muslims not agreeing on things and then killing each other.
Yeah, and it's like, you know, we can't do our religion if you do yours too nearby because we can see it and it offends us. It's like, is that really, you know, like I really loathe and despise R&B and I can't bear it when I'm forced to listen to it, but I've never wanted to kill someone for making me hear it. Like, let people, if you
tolerance,
yeah, if and until violence begins, there's, is it that much of an imposition for other people to be doing other shit than you in your general vicinity? Do your shit, leave them alone. Why would you ever want to kill someone because they do or believe something different than you?
Yeah.
How does it get to that point?
Religion and power plays by government, because I mean, you know, war is hugely tied into money.
Sure.
So that in itself is hugely problematic. And there's always going to be somebody who's profiting or benefiting from a whole bunch of people dying. It's the saddest thing in the world. It's a terrible indictment on us as a species.
Yeah, because you've got to fund the weapons and the transport and the raw materials and the food and all of that. And then afterwards, somebody's got to get the remains, you know, like the spoils will be up for grabs.
Oh, I heard, speaking of remains, I heard something really, really interesting the other day. They've made a robot that can live on like biofuel, but
I saw that as well.
But it can destroy like human remains.
Oh, yeah, and basically then eat you.
Wait a minute.
You can feed it dead bodies and this robot will be able to get shit done based on how many humans it can devour.
So there's finally a solution to the question we've been asking, what's the best way to get rid of a human body?
That's it. Feed it to this robot.
Have a murder robot go kill it and eat it. But I mean, it's pretty cool that, I mean, the flip side of that is that it's pretty cool if they can make robots that can, electronic things that can operate on biofuel. It's like quite interesting. It's a bit cyborgy. It's a step.
A couple of messages before we get to the next story, because Liesl's replied with what the book was that she sent me. Yes, Pandora's Science and Bad Science. I did get them. Thank you, Liesl. And I will be looking at them. They sound terrific. Both on my desk as we speak. CrossFit is bitches with penises. Fuck it, lift some heavy weights and become a dude, says someone on Telegram. Someone else says, life is like a penis, simple, relaxed, and hanging free. It's women who make it hard.
Not in my case.
You are better off than the rest.
Can we tell people in the Eastern Cape to please stop killing owls? They're not witches. It's 2018. Catch up. I was gutted yesterday when a highly educated colleague looked at me dead in the face and told me owls are witches and should be murdered. Yeah.
You see, superstitions.
Also, owls kill rats and mice and things that are going to eat your children, so don't kill owls. Owls don't kill children. Rats like to eat children.
Yes.
Let's just take that bottom line there. Not look any more into it.
Ben's taking the practical approach and just looking at it from like a benefit to the species perspective, which is good. I mean, owls are cool.
I know some African cultures an owl is an omen for something bad. So like owl is sitting on your roof, like some people believe someone in that house is going to die, for example.
Owls get tired of flying, so they have to sit. That doesn't mean someone's going to die. No. Can we all grow up a bit, please?
Can we all get over ourselves? We all eat an animal of sorts. Everybody calm the fuck down.
Also, it's like it goes back to the war comment just now. It's like, why does it escalate to killing? It's like, I don't dig owls. I'm going to see an owl. I'm going to be like, fuck off, owl. That's cool.
But
like you've expressed your discontent about the owl. No, you don't need
but
to kill it.
We all kill an animal of sorts. We kill cows, we kill chickens, we kill sheep.
For a practical reason.
Whatever reason it is, we're all killing an animal.
There's got to be a practical reason to killing anything.
Whatever.
Got it. We can't just be like, I don't like that thing's fucking face.
If you
stop
eating meat today, you wouldn't die. You would continue to live just fine.
I know, but if you eat the owl, that's a different story. If you're just killing it for the jaw or because you summer don't smark owls.
People like to get on their high horses about who's killing what animal for what reason. Fuck it. We're all murderers to a degree when it comes to animals. Every single
Careful,
one of
you're
us.
You're turning Sia on. He likes murderers.
What did you say?
No. Tired of it.
All right. Good morning, Double GMS and B. That's obviously Gareth Gord, Mabale, Ben, and Sia.
Why is Gord second?
I had, well, because they're two.
Oh, God, come on.
I only had the chance now to reply to about a name for the airport. How about Airport Mac Airport Face?
Oh, that's a good one.
That's a good idea.
Airport Mac Airport Face.
Yeah. Well, it's just like they call that boat. What? Boaty McBoaty. Yeah.
Boaty McBoatface.
That's a good one. I like that. If we had a vote, we'd definitely go for that. Hey, Sia, your story this morning was such a feel-good story. It's always nice to hear about folks going above and beyond. But fake doctors managed to get in and out of Charlotte McClake undetected all the time. This was up in the hospital a few months ago. The guy looks like an extra from Grey's Anatomy, if you ask me.
I swear.
Yeah, so Ariella saying, beware of this man going around in the hospital. He is not a doctor.
This week, I heard of someone, this old perverted man who managed to steal a student card and got onto the campus of, was it Wits or UJ, and was assaulting young girls. So it's sick.
Yeah, here's one. Madly van Breda's ex, who spoke yesterday, the clip we played, is not the one who sent the WhatsApp about taking her away and wanting to kill the people around her. His name is James Reed John. Cue a conspiracy of him actually getting away with the murder. The attention whore in yesterday's piece was Stefan van der Vestes. And love and help is always the fact checker. All right, thank you, fact checker. It's Claire who says, guys, I was involved in drug addict counseling, and one Thursday I counseled two guys. Oh, this is Gary, sorry. Gary says, guys, I was involved with drug addict counseling, and one Thursday I counseled two guys. They then left the group and proceeded to go and beat one of the guy's parents to death with a cricket bat. They're still in jail as we speak. Both of them exactly like Henry. No emotion whatsoever.
So there were two of them. It was one of their parents, and then he just had a homie help. Like, I want to go off my parent. Do you want to help me with that?
Yossi. Some hectic people.
Yeah, kids kill, huh? Kids kill.
And drugs also, like, at the root of a lot of these things. I mean, my understanding is that Henry van Breda had a history with that. The one that I mentioned earlier in 2001, definitely that was a factor. Mm-hmm. And now the cricket bat guys, sounds like they went out of rehab. So probably an indication that drugs might not be great for you.
Well, we all, though, to a certain extent, we have a little seed of craziness
from time to time if we're lucky.
Psychopathic.
Yeah.
No, it's about what circumstance you're in, how much you're pushed against the wall, what triggers you. It's fascinating to me.
Well, being a sociopath and a psychopath are a little different, but I think we've discussed that before. But we all do have the capacity to it's a question of, like, is there any logic behind it, you know?
I think it's a Michael Douglas movie called All Falls Down or Falling Down.
Yes.
About the, you know, he's just a guy living his life, one thing triggers him while he's stuck in traffic, goes on a killing spree.
Well, quite a few things have to go wrong, but
wait for it.
Who wants to know what's on the agenda for the Bilderberg meeting in Italy this week? This is a conspiracy theory.
What's the Bilderberg?
The Bilderberg convention is where all the rich and powerful Illuminati get together. If you go and look that up, just do a Google search on Bilderberg. It's the conspiracy theories of all conspiracy theories that these are the people who control the world.
I wonder what's on their agenda this weekend.
Controlling the world.
I'll tell you.
I've
got the agenda. They sent me my copy just yesterday.
Oh,
GC's on the Bilderberg. So why aren't you there?
Just expose yourself. Nice.
So here. Oh, did I? Oh. Wow. I mean, I saw someone else's agenda.
Yes. On the internet.
Okay, so first of all, populism in Europe. That's that right-wing populism that they're going to talk about. They're going to talk about the inequality challenge, which is really funny because they're all so super rich. Mm. The third thing they've got on the agenda is the future of work. You know, automated things, robots.
Oh, okay.
You know, what's going to happen to work. Artificial intelligence, which is linked to that. Obviously, how we will be able to get smarter and use the computers to help us get there. The US before the midterms, because, of course, they're voting in the midterm elections soon. And if it goes the way of the Republicans, that will mean that Trump is making headway. If it goes the opposite way, the Democrats have got a couple of candidates that they're very excited about. Free trade, always something they're interested in. US world leadership, as in what's the US doing with North Korea, with Iran, those kinds of things. Russia.
Well, Vlad, I mean.
Yeah, he's always on the agenda. Quantum computing. That's an interesting one.
That's badass stuff.
Saudi Arabia and Iran. Guess why? Not because we really care about Saudi Arabia and Iran, but because of oil. And the post-truth world. as in fake news.
Ah.
And current events.
Are you sure this isn't just the next series of Renegade Report, the different podcasts?
Which is the Bilderberg.
It sounds like the World Economic Forum in Davos, just without those pesky 6 and 7 0 people being invited. Yeah. Like, no press, no 6s and 7s. No, you got 8 0s and up, and fuck you, basically.
Yeah, that's it. They have the 8 0s and up.
Yeah.
Well, and they're very careful about who they invite.
Well, they say the president of the World Economic Forum is supposedly going to be there. There are 131 participants from 23 countries who have confirmed the attendance.
Sure.
Including the CEO of Total as well, the governor of the Bank of England. I'm like, okay.
Some very powerful people.
Yeah, there's potential husbands in the house, all up in that. Yeah.
Hey now.
Yes. Is Oprah going to be there?
She may be in the Bilderberg. I don't know.
I think she Skypes in.
Oprah has a new exhibit in her honor in Washington, D.C. That's what's preoccupying her weekend.
Of course you know
this. All right, so listen up, slaves. If you want to know what your masters are up to, I just gave you their agenda. Yeah. All right. Leighton says, you guys make my day. Have a great Friday. Isn't that nice?
Mm. Bloody Friday. Isn't it a beautiful thing?
It's wonderful.
It's a magical and wonderful time.
I don't have any plans for this weekend at all. Nothing.
I'm not allowed to ever publicly admit that because then I'm obligated by anyone who hears it to do what they want me to do.
Yeah.
But so don't say anything. I also allegedly might perhaps have nothing on and be very excited about it.
All right, Mubs, what else is in the news?
How long do you think you would survive in the wilderness?
Forever.
As long as it takes me to metabolize all this body fat, so I'd be all right for a while, but not because I did anything like brave.
Okay, listen,
we spoke about this yesterday,
right,
at
but
length.
You didn't voluntarily go into the wilderness. You were kind of minding your own business and then you got lost there. So you're not prepared. You have no food. You have no water. How long do you think you would
thirst
survive?
And exposure. The first bear that caught a sniff of me would have me. I'm slow.
Slow.
It entirely depends on the proximity to the nearest predator. Like between 1 and 1,000 minutes.
Because there is a Korean woman who has survived 6 nights lost in the Australian wilderness.
Sure, when that's a dry ass wilderness, yeah.
Yeah. A South Korean backpacker was rescued yesterday after being lost for 6 nights in the rugged Australian terrain. She suffered from dehydration at the time that she was found, as you can imagine, but she was relatively unscathed. Her name is Jo-hee Han. She's 25 years old. Was last seen at a supermarket in Queensland State on Thursday last week.
It's a pretty convenient spot to disappear from. If you're going to go in the wilderness, let your last spot be the supermarket.
Before telling a friend by phone the following day that she was just going to take a walk up a nearby mountain, right, in a national park. She had been lost for 5 days before friends reported her missing earlier this week, and then a search and rescue team was sent out. Her shouts for help were actually heard by someone over the weekend, and then this member of the public later got informed that, oh, by the way, I just discovered that there's a news story about a missing woman, and I was hearing strange calls over the weekend in that part of the area.
Wow.
So he informed the police.
Ah!
Oh, my God. Can you imagine how creepy?
Goodness.
And what do you do at nighttime, guys?
She was in the outback.
Well, yeah.
Okay, so that.
It's basically like an elderly buffalo's ball bag, but for miles and miles and miles and miles and miles.
Oh, what imagery, God.
It's the outback. It's got thorns, it's dry, sandy, rough.
Snakes on snakes.
Oh.
Yeah, there's snakes. Yeah, exactly. There's snakes that eat the snakes.
All the animals in Australia are trying to kill the people.
Everything's
all
poisonous.
Of 100%
of things there are poisonous. You can get bitten by a rock and die.
Yeah, instantly.
By a rock.
100% poisonous.
Yeah, it's entirely poisonous in Australia.
Have you ever heard of people, for example, in car accidents and the investigation proves that they died from a heart attack, for example, not by the impact that the car accident created? I would be that person. I would not be killed by anything out there. I would probably die from the panic attack.
You'd get yourself alone before you let them get you.
Just a casual 10 minutes. Yeah. Then it's Sia the thought
walk,
of Sia it.
Would walk from where he was stranded.
And I'm dead.
And yeah. he'd yeah. walk to fall over. Yeah.
But I mean, the thing is, you're actually okay if you just stay still, because like a fatally poisonous spider will approach you. And before it gets to you, a fatally poisonous snake will eat it. Then a fatally poisonous mongoose will fuck the snake. And then like some bird of Satan with like a pterodactyl will fly down and spray poison on the whole environment, killing everything, and then pick up the bits of carrion before a shark walks to the bird and eats it.
I think I've actually seen that on YouTube.
That's a real thing.
By the way, we've just revealed who the writer Rick and Morty really is.
Wow, that is brilliant. No, but I mean, judging by the way that
Gareth just did his best pterodactyl poison spray impression, it was beautiful.
Oh my goodness.
This is poor Sia, he wouldn't last a second.
No, I mean, judging by the way that Sia screams when he is surprised,
yeah,
that scream in by itself is enough to cause severe damage to your internal. That's Sia dying.
That was just someone popping out from behind a door. I mean, this happens every other day, so you can imagine.
Oh my gosh, what does that mean?
Now I find myself alone in the outback. Oh, okay. Rest in peace to me.
How does one increase their chances of survival, though, in a situation like this? Like, what do you do at nighttime?
It's weaponize.
Dark. At some point, your cell phone is going to die. It's completely dark. Wilderness, no city lights.
You make a fire. That's the first thing you have to do as a
human. With what?
You make
what
a fire.
How?
You
rub dry shit. There's lots of dry shit out there.
You take some of the non-poisonous rocks and you hit them together.
You could use two sticks and just rub them together. You put one down and you kind of rub the other one into it until you eventually get some smoke. You need to put a couple of dry leaves or something. There's always dry shit in Australia, so that wouldn't be a problem. So you start a fire. That at least gives you a bit of light and heat, so you'll survive the night.
And people can spot you easily.
Yeah, and if there's a plane flying over or something. But then you have to find water. And if you've found water and you've got a fire, then you can start making your way. I mean, in Australia, you'd have to, there's not a lot to eat.
Water's a difficult thing, man.
Vegetable, very difficult to find in Australia.
And even the vegetables, well, if you go, they'll bite you if you don't pick them carefully. Ben was talking about the poisonous rocks. You can tell the ones that are poisonous because they've got dead rocks all around them. But yeah, you want a fire. You want to be warm. I'm assuming the outback works like other deserts, where it's like balls hot in the day and freezing at night because it wants to hate you even more than just.
All right, I'm kind of loath to do this, but I might as well. So I've got this list of things. I have a serious like paranoia about being stranded without the things I need.
Oh.
So I've got a survival bag in my boot with a whole lot of
Stop.
Shit in it.
No way. He's a prepper.
That's preparation. It's
yeah, I've got. So I've got, yeah, there's, let me go through it for you. Razor blades, a watch, a wallet pick set for locks if I needed to do that, a cuff key in case I was cuffed, a zebra pen, an umbrella, a lighter, sunglasses, cigarettes, a change of clothes, sandals.
Sounds like you're going to the build the meeting.
Data USB, a waterproof container, some cord or rope, which you need.
Well.
A tension wrench, headlamp, loose change, rigid sunglass case, because you could store a whole lot of shit in there. Batteries, a water can, energy bars, credit card, multi-tool, blowout kit, medical shears. And a torch.
And the entire collection of the Hardy Boys.
Yeah. That's I know it's ridiculous, but if... And I mean, who knows that, you know, you probably sit in my car until I'm dead and never be used.
I would argue... Sorry, Maz, but I would argue that if you're in a situation where your emergency credit card can help you, there's probably a person there that you can be like, hello, just need to swipe my credit card for some emergency things. You see, I'm lost and no one knows where I am.
If you had to like gap it really, really fast as well. So if you had to cross borders and that kind of thing.
Did you say cigarettes? Because you don't smoke.
Yeah, no, I don't smoke.
So what are you? You're going
to start to seduce a lady.
You're going to start smoking once you go missing.
You could trade them. You can use them as a source of fire.
Okay.
You know, cigarettes, they're hot, and you can hollow them out and put something in them. There's a whole lot of reasons.
Okay. Actually, that's far easier than rubbing two sticks. Actually, just carry a packet of cigarettes and a lighter with
that's
you.
That's it.
Just,
well, if you've got the lighter, you don't necessarily need this.
But Gareth also wants to then obviously get in good with the prison guards if you were to be, arrested.
Listen, or make friends with Henry van Bredaar.
This is a list of things, and I've done a whole lot of research on the internet as to what the essential tools would be if you were stranded in some wild place or if you were in a foreign country and you couldn't speak the language, what you would need. That's the stuff. That's what they tell me.
Interesting that you don't have a weapon, because I'm now thinking...
No, I would get my gun.
I'm now thinking of my survival kit. So I've got the bear claw.
Yes, you've got... I gave you that.
You gave me that. Best gift ever.
Yeah.
Got the bear claw.
I'm just warning anyone who breaks into my bully's house late at night. It's going to end badly for you.
Bear what claw, is a bear taser. Claw?
Tell him about the bear claw.
Basically, it is a contraption, a blade contraption. And essentially what happens is that when I stab you, I have to aim for your stomach.
Yeah, your
and
guts.
Then I have to dig deep in it. And then the blade hooks into your intestines so that when I pull the blade out, I come out with your intestines just like a rope.
Is it like one blade with... Is it like a talon of a bird of prey?
Yes.
It's many blades.
No, it's just... It's not many blades. It's just...
It's a vicious looking thing though, and it's sharp as shit. And then I also got your taser.
You got me the taser. I always have to have fresh batteries in that because otherwise it's useless.
Yeah, this is what my bally's got.
Yeah.
Oh my
god. Mine is a single blade.
But what you're showing us is a knuckle duster with Wolverine claws on it.
That's Wolverine.
That is like the best thing ever.
Yeah.
Otherwise known as the Australian thick knife.
So you'd have those two.
Australian
what else?
Spider prevention weapon.
Unfortunately, I'm gonna have to have my asthma pump in the bag because then I'm fucked.
Yeah, you'd be.
Yeah, no.
Yeah,
it's a disaster.
What would you take, Sia? What would be your first thing you'd grab if you knew that the zombies were coming?
I don't even want to think about this. Yeah, I want to. What would make me move very quickly? Because I'm not a fighter. I don't know. I just want some sort of contraption that would get me out of the situation fast enough. I'm not about to
attempt. Maybe a hydrogen tank that you light and you ride.
Thank you.
Flare guns. Flare guns are probably a useful thing.
Ooh. Yeah. And if you're stuck somewhere and ready for a party, those are like impromptu sparklers for a show.
Wow.
Fabulousness factor taken into account.
Entertainment factor, I think yes.
Well, you see, when Sia goes missing, he's still going to look fabulous. So,
some Vaseline.
Get ashy.
Ashy for the lips. If I get into a fight, I smear some on my face so that the punch comes in but it glides off my face. Yeah, multifaceted Vaseline. Thank you.
You can never have too much Vaseline.
Plus, if Sia, there's a device that if you pulls the plug out in a hurry, this comes on.
Oh, yes!
And lights.
Yeah. Signal to other fabulous people that they're needed.
That's how they find me. They're like, what is that? Why is Diana Ross playing in the Outback?
Sia Sangweni breaks down stereotypes by declaring that his number one survival item should he be lost in the Outback is Vaseline.
Vaseline.
The
and
most
Diana
important
Ross.
Thing for life. Vaseline.
Ben, anything you'd grab immediately?
A golf club.
Ben is the only one who's been...
It's a weapon and it's a recreational thing.
Ben is the only one who's been in actual life-threatening situations and he's been shot. So, you know, maybe he's right. Take a golf club. That's a pretty useful thing.
Well, you've got one thing.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Oh, no, are we limited to just one?
No, you can take more than one.
Well, then I'd go your route and obviously have, like, you know...
A survival bag.
Perfume and literature.
Perfume. There's no literature.
Chocolates and... Tinned caviar, whatever the crap you have in your bag.
Tinned caviar.
Machine gun.
Is this you?
Ammunition.
This you? Right.
Backpack full of water with one of those straw things and a brolly.
What's a
You're in the Outback.
There's nothing more annoying than being rained on.
Oh. No, man. You get sun dried out there.
Yeah, you'll turn into
a
raisin.
It's a real thing.
Even
there's no
poisonous
trees. Yeah, even the sun in Australia is poisonous. And there's no shelter. They don't have like big trees and stuff. It's you really won't be able to get out of the
except
sun.
Except the eucalyptus trees, which of course in very hot weather also burst into
flames.
Yeah.
The koala bears that are actually also like literally poisonous.
Yes, dangerous as all hell.
Koala bears are cute, but they also just fight all the time.
Mm. Hey, listen, I mentioned eucalyptus trees for a good reason. It's time for us to talk a little bit about your garden And you know, we've done this for the last couple of Fridays in a row trying to help you. And I actually put my own advice to good use last week because I have a couple of indoor plants and I wanted to find out whether or not I'd given them enough water. Well, this week we're going to give you a couple of tips to help your citrus. A lot of people have this fantasy of having orange trees or lemon trees. And you know, a lemon tree is really good. If you're the kind of person who has people around to your house often, a lemon tree is helpful because what drinks don't have lemon in them? I mean, anyone who doesn't put out lemon slices with their drinks is basically uncivilized.
Well,
and why should you buy those all the time if you can have a tree producing them for you? It's not a hard thing to do. So, growing your own citrus trees, according to Lifestyle Home and Garden, is as easy as ABC. Nothing beats the pleasure of picking a fresh lemon from your own tree. You can either put it in a salad, you can add it to iced tea, or you could soothe a cold with it. Do you remember? You can also drizzle fresh lemon onto things like
fish.
Yeah, it's lovely.
Salads.
Citrus trees are well suited to containers, so you don't have to have a big garden for this. You can put them on a balcony. You can put them in garden beds. You can grow them in big gardens, pretty much anywhere, even on a balcony. Citrus has wrongly gained a reputation of being difficult to grow. Here are some basics to help you succeed. And don't take my word for it. This is from Lifestyle Home and Garden, all right? First of all, you need to select varieties that are suitable to your region and climate. Don't go and get a tree that has some exotic fruit that only grows in the Amazon because it's going to die. You need to get something that will manage in the region in which you live. So look for things in the Joburg area and ask people for advice. Citrus prefer full sun, so they don't want semi-shade or any of that stuff. Water your citrus tree well and regularly. When it's in bloom or setting fruit, keep it moist but never waterlogged. By planting your tree with some small stones or pebbles at the base of the soil, you will assist with drainage. You need to maintain healthy soil for your citrus by fertilizing and mulching it well, preferably with compost to help retain moisture. And you can buy that in bags now. It's not even difficult to do. Citrus don't like interference with their roots. Weed by hand around the tree. Keep an area of about a meter free of any other plants. If it's planted in a pot, do not underplant it with other plants, but rather surround it with beneficial plants in separate containers. That's useful info. Citrus trees do not need to be pruned regularly, except for cutting out dead branches or when it becomes overgrown. It's advisable to remove a few of the lower branches on young trees to encourage growth into a standard tree and to promote good air circulation. Trees in pots and containers will need to be watered and fertilized more regularly than those that are planted straight into the garden, obviously. And June is the best time to pick and enjoy your fruit. So that's when it's winter here. Mm. It's perfect.
Must be. I went to a friend's house yesterday and his lemon tree was looking rather plump.
Nice. Did you steal any?
No, well, it's not my nature to steal, but I mean,
did you ask for any?
I admired his lemons.
Okay. You didn't take one?
No.
He didn't offer you one?
Seems a bit imposing.
Okay. It's so polite, Ben.
This is his go time for his lemon tree. I'm going to come around and say, hi, give me one.
Yeah.
So lime trees, you can get limes.
Dude, lime
well.
Trees are killer. I got a friend a lemon tree as a gift, and it took it a while to mature to the point where it began lemoning. And lo, it was a lime tree. And limes are rarer and more expensive than lemons. This was a happy accident.
And lo, it sounds like a biblical revelation. This is incredible.
And the tree spake upon us with limes.
And limes should be picked as soon as they're ready, but other citrus fruits can be left on the tree until you need them. So you don't have to rush to pick them either. Cover the new or young citrus trees, other than lemon trees, with frost protection fleece, which will help let the water through and the light, but will still protect them from the cold and frost. And you can also get that at Lifestyle Home and Garden. And don't forget, you can always go to their website if you want real info. lifestyle.co.za/citrus. They've got a whole thing there that will take you through this step by step. If you missed anything, you can always catch up there as well. Lifestyle Home Garden. They are the anchor tenant at the Lifestyle Garden Center, corner of Bayes Nordea and Esterhout Avenue in Rand Park Ridge. Lifestyle.co.za.
Are you trying to tell me, Gareth, that all those times I rushed out to pick my citrus according to a schedule, when it didn't suit me, it wasn't a convenient time, I could have just left them on the tree until I needed them, unless my limes.
That's the best place, not your limes, but everything else.
I mean,
you see,
if I'd only known.
Because people feel, oh, I got to pick these things. No, you pick them, then you're going to have to use
them. Dead of winter.
No use.
3 a.m.
No. That's what you were doing?
That's when the schedule told me to do.
What a moron. All right, it's Friday, which also means we get to see George Meany. How are you, George?
Good, and you, Gareth?
Last 2 weeks, you were busy with the bike fest and some other things. You were in Cape Town. So you're back in the studio with all the news on cars and motoring and pretty much everything else.
Back. Talking about growing things.
Yes. Are you any good at any of this stuff?
No. I can keep a plant alive, I think. But my wife has decided to get those little square things you get from, I think, Checkers or
instant plant.
Yes, yeah. My mother brought those for the grandchildren.
There's about 400 of them on our kitchen counter. They come like a hockey puck.
Yeah.
And you fill them with water.
Yeah,
it's almost like a little, it's a small pot-shaped thing of like organic hard stuff that when you wet it, it becomes the soil.
Yeah, it becomes the soil. And then and the way you know to water it is the outside wrapper gets dry.
Oh.
So when you put water in it, you can see the level of the moisture on the outside.
So this is like an idiot's guide, basically.
It's like if you don't know how to grow a plant, buy one of those. Or get one of those, because I think you spend like $150 at Checkers or something.
Get a free cabbage. No, for real.
No, it is.
I keep getting cabbage.
All right. Well, that's probably a sign from the universe, Gord.
To eat more cabbage.
Mm. Mm.
Don't come in lemons.
All right. What do you got for us?
So, do you remember the Mercedes-Benz that plummeted down Chapman's Peak?
Yes, I know what you're going to talk to me about. You know, they redone that ad.
Yes, they redid the ad. So what happened is Mr. White, who was the gentleman who plummeted down Chapman's Peak, they got him back into a Mercedes-Benz S-Class. But what they didn't do was they didn't tell him what they were going to do. So they put him in this S-Class, and the new S-Class has autonomous driving.
Yeah, around Chapman's Peak Drive.
So they stuck him in this thing.
This oak already has fallen off Chapman's
Peak.
Yes,
30 stories.
Back in the 80s.
And survived.
Back in the 80s survived. In an old Merc.
But by mistake, or did they
No. So what happened was, he was driving home, he was tired, and I think he got dozy behind the wheel, and the car went off Chapman's Peak Drive, plummeted down how many meters?
30 stories.
Right?
30 stories.
30 stories. And he survived. And then the ad was, he survived because it was Mercedes-Benz.
Okay.
It was a very famous ad during the 80s and 90s. It went on for many years, and people loved it. And he survived, and he got out with a few injuries, but mostly everything was okay, and the car looked like, you can't believe it was a disaster, but he made it. So now, however many years later, they put him in an S-Class. I watched this. It's beautifully filmed. It's nicely put together. It's a little story. All of it's 5 minutes maybe.
Yeah.
And they put him in this S-Class, but he's not allowed to touch the steering wheel. And they're going to take him around Chapman's Peak Drive. Now,
just as well. He's got a terrible track record on that road.
Perfect candidate. So he has to push autonomous mode on the Mercedes-Benz and leave the car alone around Chapman's Peak while the car takes him around Chapman's Peak Drive. And the horror and terror.
One shot at that.
Exactly. But I think Gareth's right. He's probably the perfect candidate not to touch the steering wheel.
Yeah.
Then Tesla has yet had another car crash.
Should I say,
Tesla has had another car crash while using autopilot.
This is really getting in the way of where we've got to get with these electric cars, because people kill each other all the time in cars.
Yeah.
That doesn't stop us from driving non-automated cars.
Well, this is Elon Musk's argument. He says, why are the 40,000 deaths not on the front page, but an accident where someone's ankle is hurt gets to front page news?
Yeah, and I obviously don't know the circumstances about this news story, but in other incidents, it's been like, in some of the cases, it's been like people walking into the freeway.
Yeah.
You know, like either severe recklessness from the humans involved or just like completely unpredictable behavior. Or even, I think in one case, an actual deliberate walk into traffic suicide.
Suicide attempt. So it's still yet to be proven whether autopilot was engaged when this crash happened. But Tesla keeps telling people that own Teslas, this is not an autonomous vehicle. You still need to keep your hands on the steering wheel.
And
the Tesla has sensors to warn you when your hands are off the steering wheel.
But what's wrong with people? People are so dumb.
Yeah.
Really, I would much rather trust autonomous driving car, self-driving car, than I would people.
Do you need other cars to also be autonomous? Because as soon as the other cars are all driven by people, the robot can't predict stupidity. Random shit people are going to do.
Exactly.
Eventually, we want to get to a point where humans do not control the direction of any moving piece of steel.
Exactly, but it also will be fallible in the beginning. I mean, how many of the Wright brothers prototypes didn't quite fly right initially? Yeah. You know, Tesla's failed over and over.
Now we all get onto a plane. We don't go, Ooh.
SpaceX had 19 failed launches in a row, and now they're the best at launching rockets. You know, the first autonomous car is not going to be perfect.
Yeah. That's why you got to watch the road. You can't sit and talk to your passenger.
Yeah.
Fuel price.
This was like the biggest fuel price hike ever, right?
Ever. But you know what the sad part is? 33% of the fuel cost in the country goes to some sort of tax.
Yeah.
Or levy.
Well, it's a stealth tax. It's another reason the government... we've got to get rid of government. We really do. I mean, they've got to be pared down to like 10 people max in an office in Bedford View. That's all we need.
Run like a tech startup.
Yeah. We don't need more than... You know how huge the government in this country are? And now I see the civil servants, the government unions, are busy saying they need a 10% increase. For what?
While we're trying to push inflation down.
Correct. And SARS are struggling to gather tax because the economy's shrinking.
Yeah.
Don't you guys pay any attention to the numbers? Can you tell what the numbers are?
Because in the microeconomy, it doesn't matter. You know, down at employee level, it doesn't really matter to them.
No, they don't care. They don't care how much it costs an ordinary person in South Africa an extra 50 rand a month to get to where they're going when they're only earning a couple of hundred rand a month. It's terrible. It's just completely selfish.
So from that depressing news, Ford is going to launch or is going to have an exotic Bucky available in 2019. Called the Ford Shelby F-150, going for 2.5 million rand, 565 kilowatt Bucky.
It looks horrible.
Looks like a regular American muscle truck.
Yeah.
Not quite as big as those massive muscle trucks, but 565 kilowatts, called the F-150, going for 2.5 million rand, available next year.
You interested in it, George?
Not a chance.
No. Ben?
Well, it's crazy money, but I mean, that's one hell of a machine.
It is one hell of a machine. No, I'm an SUV person. I don't do the Bucky at the back.
I'll stick with free organic penis technology and just to go with that. That came out entirely wrong. But that is a massive, massive machine.
I'm trying to marry Bucky with that.
Yeah. It's a big, shiny metal penis. Anyway.
All right.
That's the news for the week.
Sounds good. It's a lot to think about. There's plenty to do here on cliffcentral.com. In fact, coming up, I think you're going to enjoy this, is a replay of the time that we had the two porn stars, Jessica Drake and Tanya Tate, in here.
Yeah, that was when they were in South Africa a couple of years ago for Sexpo.
Yes.
And I took mushrooms and went to Sexpo. And then my one friend who was helping with PR for the whole porn star visit thing said to me, it was a weekend, and said to me, like, look, you know, they need a night out. And like, I was in my 20s and jawling. Now, it wasn't like I was asked to bed a porn star, but I was asked if I wouldn't mind taking them out on the jaw.
Yeah.
And I was tripping so hard on mushrooms that I was like, no, I'm going to eat those sugar-coated cashew nuts. I don't want anything to do with this.
They would have been looked after by Gord Laws.
Yeah, I would have taken them on a jaw.
They would have been terrified by Gord Laws.
Yeah,
in that
can you imagine?
Current state.
All right, everybody, have a good weekend, and we will see you on Monday. If you need to get hold of us, you know what to do. WhatsApp 0797482090. If I didn't get to your messages this morning, we can always pick it up on Monday. Tell us what you've got on your mind. You know what to do. All right. Thanks, everybody. Ben's just said to me, do I not want to do the unnews anymore? And I'm like, oh, Jesus. I knew I'd forgotten something. I know, it's ridiculous. All right, let's get the unnews. How can I be consistent?
Unstop the show, Gareth.
Unstop. That's what I just did. All right, here it is. This is the stuff you care about and that you need to know about this morning. Cyril Ramaphosa has spent the night with a bunch of Afrikaans people in an effort to mend fraying race relations. Things were going really well as they bribed and drank brandy and spoke about the songs of Bless Bridges and how he should always be acknowledged as the Frank Sinatra of South Africa. And then Cyril brought up the issue of land and instantly found himself sleeping under the stars alone. Katy Perry says she's excited about her upcoming trip to South Africa and is looking forward to experiencing everything Joburg has to offer. Naturally, she's talking shit. She's going to perform, saying something about Nelson Mandela, and then she'll get back to her hotel room and leave immediately. And finally, Sia Khaleesi will lead the Bucks out for the first time tomorrow. And with that, there is a newfound excitement in rugby in South Africa. Fikile Mbalula has gone all out and rented a box at Ellis Park. The main purpose of this is to entertain Cyril Ramaphosa in an attempt to get his old job back as sports minister. His social media activity has plateaued horribly lately, but his old job and a selfie with Khaleesi would be his road back to Trend Town. All right, now I mean it. I'm actually going to say goodbye now. I mean it this time. Honestly, don't make me say it again. What?
For realsies, goodbye.
Yeah, shut up. Bye-bye, Gord.
This is CliffCentral.com.